From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. Coming up, we're going to talk to Jesse Neeland about their new book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues.
It's almost like seeing through the matrix. You're like, I now realize that my parents or, you know, my sister or my friends are just constantly talking about weight loss or constantly complimenting appearance. And like, there comes a point where you're like, I have a better way.
But first, let's unwind from the week that was with a couple of excellent humans. With me this week, we have Erin Allen, host of the WBEZ Daily News podcast, The Rundown. Erin, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yay. Also with us is Adora Namigade, Metro reporter at WBEZ. Adora, glad to have you back as well.
It is a pleasure.
Ugh, yay. Okay, so this week we are going to introduce a new ridiculous game. We have decided to call it Burden or Delight, and it's exactly how it sounds. We're going to tell you about a news story from the week, and then you can tell us if you think it would be a burden or a delight. So first up, we have a story about a family in Los Angeles who discovered approximately 1 million pennies in the crawl space of a family member who recently died. We did the math, so you don't have to. That would be worth about $10,000. But it's also possible there are like some super rare ones in there that could be more money, but also there are approximately 1 million of them, which means like you're dealing with like just an insane quantity of pennies. And I did look it up. I think it's about 500,000 pounds of pennies, which is just like
too many pounds.
Insane. So yeah, what do you think? Is this a burden or a delight? Adora?
Okay, here's the thing. I feel like I have to say it's a delight. While I was, you know, I was reading about how they were struggling to take the pennies to the banks and some banks were rejecting them because they don't have space. But like, this is a first world burden. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Because if you were down and out and you found $10,000, it does not matter how it came. You would be like,
you will figure it out, baby.
And I think that I would take that position as well. Okay. Like, if the worst of my problems is that I have $10,000, no matter how it is,
inconvenient $10,000.
Yes, then I'm gonna be like, you know what? Thank you, God. Okay.
Yeah.
That's funny. I think that says like how bougie I am in my own life, where I'm like, I don't want that. I feel like this is a full burden situation. What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, I think you're right in the first world place, because like I'm like this, the delights to me are like the win-wins. And this is this is like a burden and a delight. So it's really just a burden. Like, I'm just like, you know, like, and then like, if I'm wealthy, then it's like, oh, this shall be a delight for someone that I will give this to and pay to transport. You know what I mean? But like, for me, no.
I do think their middle ground of like, we don't want to deal with this. Someone else give us 25. Like, we're going to guess that it's worth more than the 10,000 of just straight up pennies. Yeah. So give us 25 and then y'all can look through those million pennies and see what's in there. I think it's a nice little compromise. But even then, it's like, I think about it, especially, you know, living in an apartment in Chicago. It's like, I can't, where the fuck am I going to put a million
pennies? Yeah, like they, because they were cleaning out a deceased family member's home, right?
Yes.
So like, you got to get that stuff out of there if you're trying to sell the house. You could sell the house with the pennies included, maybe, and then be like,
I kind of like that.
Add 25,000 to the cost of the house.
I like that.
That's a fun Redfin post or whatever. Yeah, I think that's cool.
And you wonder, like, why were they there to begin with is really my question.
Well, that's the other thing is, I do feel like, you know, discussing the whole, are y'all familiar with like the Swedish death cleaning thing that came up a couple of years ago?
No,
I think there's
I'm
a book about it. The idea is that like, it's a gift that you can give future generations as you age, is to clean up after your own shit, essentially, so that you're not burdening them with a bunch of stuff when you die. And I do think this is an interesting example of that one where like, you know, to receive a $10,000 check after a family member passes would be extremely generous and lovely.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like that could be wonderful, but a million pennies, I don't know. It's also not quit your job money, which is what I'm looking for.
That's true. That's true. I'm looking for a payout
a
for
million
a
dollars
so I can go to the beach.
Right. I guess maybe I shouldn't say that on this show, but you know what I mean.
WBZ, please keep employing me. I love working for you.
Exactly. Thank you so much for all of the generous benefits I received.
But if I found $1 million, I don't know.
Okay, so also this week, the Beatles announced that they're releasing a new song that uses artificial intelligence to include John Lennon's vocals, which I am so conflicted about. Paul McCartney said they used AI to like isolate John Lennon's real voice from an old demo and then mix it into the new song. I mean, I love the Beatles. They're probably one of my favorite bands ever, but like, I do not think the world needs this.
No.
Adora. Okay, Aaron, you have opinions. We'll start with you this time around. And also, like, AI is extremely troubling on a number of levels. So what do you think? Burden or delight on this one?
Okay. This, in some circles, may be an unpopular opinion, and others may be blasphemy. But I'm just like...
Uh-oh.
I'm so excited for what you're about to say.
I'm scared. Go on.
Okay, like, I understand, you know, you're like international sensation, like, whatever. I'm over it.
That's fair.
I watched Across the Universe all those years ago, and it is those versions of Beatles songs that I save on my Spotify playlist.
Oh, interesting.
I'm sorry, Beatles.
So they still have a place in your heart, but it's the different versions.
I'm on the fence. I'm like ambivalent about it, but mostly I'm just like, we don't need more Beatles songs. And if you got to go that far and burden yourself by getting AI to bring it back, like, I'm over it.
So I agree with Aaron that it's a straight up burden 100%, but for a different reason. Mm. So I just feel like it feels dishonest. Okay. Like, I feel like
totally.
If I didn't know that he had already died, or, you know, I was a young kid, I was in Gen Z, I'm like trying to discover the Beatles for the first time, I would think that like he actually recorded this with his boys. And yes. I just feel like I want to know how the song was really recorded. And I want a disclaimer before the song that's like, hey, just so you know, we revived his voice with AI.
This is
like,
robots.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is not, he was not here. It feels dishonest. I don't like that.
Well, to that point too, I mean, especially for us working in an industry where you have to be so cautious about getting permission to use people's voices for things, like, how does John feel about this? Is his
great
family
question.
Getting a cut? Like, the whole, it's just so weird.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like weird ethical questions. And then that leads into the conversation about AI in general, because we all work in a field where we use our voices. You know, someone could take our voice
for sure
and put it on something that we didn't get permission for. I mean that's scary to me.
So yeah, burden or delight on AI then, Adora?
It's a whole burden, but the tough thing is like it's here to stay. So it's weird. I don't want to be one of these people who, like, you know, when Facebook came out, people were like, oh my gosh, social media. Oh my, but social media was here to stay, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you got to figure it out.
That's what I'm conflicted about. I'm like, I think it's a burden, but I think it's here. So like, what do I do?
Yeah. I think burden might not even be like a strong enough word, honestly. What do you think, Erin?
Okay. This is the thing about AI. Like, I appreciate that it's creating all of these conversations about education and, you know, curriculum and all of that. Like, I really appreciate that. It's really pushing things forward in that direction. And I think AI has a capacity to push a lot of things forward, because we need to remember that, like, humans are actually vital, real people, organic things that, like, live and die. Are like really important and vital to our society, right? Like actual writers, right? Actual producers, actual
artists. Yep.
Yeah. On the other hand, like, I've been seeing these Martin Luther King heads on top of like different black men's bodies. And I'm like,
I am troubled.
I am not. I feel like it's hilarious. And I get a kick out of it. I mean, there are these whole TikTok accounts devoted to like Keanu Reeves doing things, and it's not him. And like, I don't know how Keanu feels about that. We can never know how MLK feels about that. I have a homie right now. She's a Gen X, and she is like very much offended and bothered by MLK being on these different people. But I mean, let's talk about why we're mad, because that man's body exists in the world and we don't know his story. Yeah. Like, why are we mad that MLK's face is on his body?
Like, because I'm a millennial and that sounds creepy. Like, it just sounds creepy to me. I just get creepy vibes.
Well, I think too, like, the fake news stuff is so close to, you know, it's like what is and isn't real is such a troubling conversation in this day and age.
Misinformation. That I think, that's true.
You know, that it's like, I think it's one thing if it's obviously fake and it's just like funny and harmless, but it all feels like such a slippery slope, you know?
And then where's that line between funny and harmless and like straight up disinformation that is harmful?
Yeah.
Because some things are obvious to us that they're fake, but everything is not. And as the technology improves, it will be harder to tell what is fake and what is real.
And we started to see this with The Onion. You know, people would be posting stuff on Facebook, like big, like skeleton bones and stuff. And I'm like, that wasn't a dinosaur right there. Like, that was somebody took that for the onion and, like, you know, I mean, even filters, right? People put filters on their faces. I mean, it's a norm
for
now.
Sure.
I mean, this is a whole thing.
No, that's
right?
true.
Like, misinformation is like a whole thing. It's not just with AI. I think that we need to deal with it. And I think AI is one of the things that we need to deal with within it. But it's, I don't know. For me, it is sometimes harmless and amusing. It's not all bad.
It depends on the context. I think you're totally right about that. Okay, so let's do our last story. This is about a 76-year-old woman in Ecuador who woke up in the middle of her wake. She literally knocked on the coffin.
No.
Waking up in a coffin does sound like an absolute nightmare, but not being dead, pretty cool. So, Erin Burdner Delight.
Okay, this got into the, like, Kevorkian situation a little bit for me, because I'm like, do I want to be, this woman was like, you know, and I want to be delicate here because, you know, life is sacred. But like, am I like so close to being, am I so close to having passed away that someone thinks I have passed away? You know, I mean, she's not in a good condition, right? She's in critical condition, actually. First of all, I would wake up and be like, oh, this is a dream. You know, that to me in that situation, I feel like it's a burden. I'm not trying to like be living in such a poor condition that I'm like next to dead.
That's fair. The thing I found myself thinking about is the idea that, I don't know if y'all have ever thought about this, but like, it does sound kind of nice to be able to be at your own funeral, right? Huh. It's like this time where everyone comes together to celebrate you and hopefully say nice things about you. And even on the petty side, to like see who shows up and who doesn't, right? Is like, I do kind of like the idea of being able to be there for it. That to me is like the one potential upside of this situation, aside from also not being dead. Though I think your point, Erin, is like, also super legit.
Wow. You know, when I thought about this story, I thought about it more from the perspective of like her living relatives.
You're at the
wake.
I'm
at a funeral. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of a sudden the person I'm there for is awake. I would be like, wow, wild. Hello. But I think it would be cool.
I'm out.
This is a dream.
I think the cool thing. Yeah. But I think what would be cool about that would be like, even if you're about to go kind of thing and you're on the end of life, like, you kind of get this rare chance that most people don't get to know that, like, you're going to die and you know what your funeral looks like. You can make some last minute critiques, changes for the next time, because you know you got to go at some point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You could be like, hey, purple is not the color. Gold is it for next time. So that they can do it right. I don't know. I think it would be cool.
I mean, for me, like, also, I got questions because I'm like, okay.
Oh, for sure.
Was there no pulse?
Right.
I know they're investigating, you know, this also. Yeah. I'm like, and then like, what woke her up? Also, like, did somebody say something?
No, that's a good question. Like, how often does this happen? Also, I was like, that's so wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I don't know. It is. I mean, it's a resurrection, right? Like, it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You two are absolutely delightful, and I appreciate you both for coming on. Thank you for playing this ridiculous game with me.
Thank you for making it. It's a nice game.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you.
After the break, a lesson on body neutrality. In the early 2010s, body positivity was the it thing. It felt like every beauty commercial was shouting, love the skin you're in, or love your body inside and out.
My beauty.
My beauty.
My beauty.
Easier said than done, though, right? Because it's still a lot of pressure on you to feel good about yourself in a world where fat phobia and lookism, or discrimination based on how you look, is coming at you from every direction. Body neutrality, on the other hand, is an idea that attempts to take some of that pressure off.
I define body neutrality as the ability to see your body without added meaning, significance, or judgment. So that's a lot of stuff, but it's basically just the ability to see your body for what it is and not all of the extra meaning that we've learned from our conditioning, and also not the extra meaning of it being tied to our self-worth.
That is Jessie Neeland. They just wrote a book on body neutrality. The idea has come up a number of times on this show, so I wanted to take the chance to dig deeper into how we can put body neutrality into practice.
What I think is interesting about it is that, like, body neutrality and loving your body can totally coexist happily because it's the kind of love we would offer, like, the loved ones in our lives. You know, we don't look at our loved ones and be like, oh, you look terrible today. I love you a bit less.
You would be so much better if.
It's not conditional. It's like, you know, people annoy us and they get on our nerves and we still love them and we still know they're worthy of love. So if we were really talking about that kind of love, I think maybe it would be, I don't know that it's necessarily more attainable exactly, but it would definitely be a lot more useful and a lot less problematic. But what the body positivity movement was pushing is a lot more like loving how you look. And that is where things get really tricky, because if you've spent like years or decades hating your body, the thought of just changing how you feel to the exact opposite end of the spectrum feels like science fiction.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of loving how you look, I mean, even that is so intertwined in really problematic ideas around deriving value from your appearance, which I think especially for, you know, people who grow up as women in this world is like, that's a real sticky one.
Yeah, definitely. And that's ultimately what, like, my work is trying to get at, is recognizing in what way you have tied your sense of self-worth and value and, you know, what you deserve in the world to your body or your appearance, and stripping that stuff away.
It's so interesting to me because it also seems like so much of it then becomes stripping away all of these things that we're so intensely trained to participate in, too.
Yeah, it is a bit like ripping the rug out from underneath you in terms of like the very fabric of reality that we've all learned, you know, like different kinds of bodies mean different things about people. That's what we learn in so many different ways that we never even think about. So stripping it away is like, honestly, you have to really challenge and dismantle your entire worldview.
Yeah, that's super complicated.
It can be really overwhelming. But also, I think in today's kind of quick fix culture, and even with body positivity, there's a lot of things out there that are like, you know, 6 weeks to loving yourself. And I don't know, there's a lot of stuff that would make you think this should be easy, but it's absolutely not easy. It's time consuming. It's scary. It's hard, but it's also so rewarding and so worth it.
So I'd love to talk a little more about gender role stuff, which you, of course, get at in the book, too. I think, you know, especially for me as a woman, like I think we're so socialized to, even if we don't know it, to find value in our appearance. I know the system is just as oppressive for, you know, dudes for all genders, but I'm really curious kind of how you're seeing that playing out in the different kinds of people that you're working with.
Yeah. So everyone can struggle with body image issues, but generally speaking, the obstacles that are going to exist for them are going to be based in some kind of gender role ideal. And we obviously have like masculinity standards for men that you're supposed to be tall and muscular and lean and, you know, sort of like we have that particular ideal. So for them, it's about being big and strong and powerful and jacked or whatever, you know, masculine.
Yes.
And then for women, it's kind of the opposite. Like you can be jacked, but you got to be small, sort of dainty. You can have curves, but only in the right places. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And mostly there's this big focus on weight loss and being small or thin. And then actually, I would say over the last couple of years, I've noticed a new ideal growing for non-binary folks, which is like the sort of androgynous look. But but it's not coming from the same place. We don't have centuries of history around, you know, what a non-binary person is supposed to be, because we didn't have that language or concept even a decade ago, really. So even though I do think it shows up in a totally different way, and a lot of it is actually just a desire to express ourselves in such a way that we're not identifying with one binary gender role or the other, there is also for sure starting to become an ideal around like you're not non-binary enough if you look too masculine or too feminine. So it just totally depends. Like these things impact what we learn is good and what we learn is bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, given the fact that so many of these systems can feel really inescapable, I don't know. I'm thinking about lookism, and I'm thinking about the fact that to a certain extent, a lot of this stuff is human nature. You know, I mean, throughout human history, we have like put beauty on a pedestal, right? Mm-hmm. I am really curious what you think on that front. I mean, obviously, I'm struggling through this question, but, you know, I've heard a lot of people, activists in different spheres, talk about how it really is about change from within and, you know, getting that momentum. And if enough people join, that's what it takes to create a movement. But it can still feel so overwhelming and exhausting for just one person to try and figure this stuff out.
So is your question kind of like, where do I understand the line to be between human nature and like social conditioning?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a great interpretation of my babbling. Thank you.
Okay. So I guess I would say when it comes to our quality of life as a person struggling with body image issues, our quality of life is like super deeply impacted in a negative way. And it often feels like we are connected to what other people think or what society thinks, right? Like even a person with a lot of body privilege will say, I just don't feel like people like me are good enough, right? It almost always has this link to the everybody, to the society, to the acceptance, to the social hierarchies. But there's a huge difference between the level of suffering that comes from body image issues and the level of suffering that comes from other areas of like preference and privilege. So for example, if you, I don't know, you really just wish you were rich, you don't usually go around feeling such deep shame and self-loathing over the fact that you aren't. Mm-hmm. Like if you're living in poverty, you might sure. spend a lot of time and energy thinking about getting out of it, but we don't usually like attack ourselves for the yeah. other areas of I want to be acceptable or higher status in society. With body image issues, we attack ourselves constantly. It's mm-hmm. got so much power. And that power speaks to how we value ourselves, how we learn to connect our own worth, like literally being worthy of existing, being worthy of taking up space, being worthy of everything, respect, belonging, all of it. So when we talk about body neutrality, we're not talking about changing how other people treat you because we can't. Mm-hmm. And that means that a person in a privileged body is going to have a lot easier of a time than a person in a marginalized body. And that's all just reality. Mm-hmm. But a person in either body can come to the difference with neutrality is inside themselves saying, this is my fault and I am a failure versus this is society's fault and that person is upholding a system of oppression and causing me harm. Mm. And I don't think I want to like participate in this space or with those people or whatever, because I know that I'm worthy and they are wrong.
Yeah. So in the back of the book, you have a frequently asked question section, which I loved. Mm. Were you always planning on adding that?
No, that was actually a really last minute thing.
Really?
My editor said, you know, I think it would be so great if you could do this. And at that point, I was so burnt out on the book.
You're like, are you kidding me?
I can't even describe the level of overwhelm. I've never felt anything like it.
Well, there's such nice distillations. And this kind of speaks to our last topic, too. The idea of like if someone is working to release themselves from the negative associations around body, but they say like, it, you know, it can be really difficult when other people are constantly reinforcing that stuff. And yeah. your answer in terms of like how to navigate that was so thorough.
Like it's a big part of the process because we are a communal animal, you know, we're a social creature human. Mm-hmm. So like we need our connections to thrive. And when everyone that you are connected with is pushing back on something, it's really, really hard to fully sink into it. So teaching the people around you, not necessarily the whole thing, but just teaching them how to treat you at least, it's a huge, huge part of the process. It's almost like seeing through the matrix. You're like, I now realize that my parents or, you know, my sister yeah. or my friends are just constantly talking about weight loss or constantly complimenting appearance and like criticizing appearance. And, you know, it just, there comes a point where you're like, I want to teach you. I have mm-hmm. a better way.
For sure. I know something that has helped me and doesn't always, but has on occasion is realizing often the people in my life who do make the most intense comments also carry the most shame for themselves, you know, and trying to have some compassion for that has been really helpful, I think.
A lot of times bringing that compassion and curiosity and even just asking them, like, I've noticed you make a lot of these comments and it makes me, you know, worry about your own relationship to your body and your own insecurities. If you ever wanted to talk about it, I'm here. Like that kind of thing can be so powerful to open up a conversation, because when it comes to body image issues, we just think of it as like the air we breathe. We don't walk around, most people anyway, I certainly didn't walk around being like, I have body image issues and it's a problem I could work on. Like, I just thought, you know, I was like, body image issues are like the portrayals of anorexic girls in movies. Like, what I have is just normal. Mm-hmm. And so people don't even realize that it's even notable until someone reflects, hey, I've noticed.
Yeah, totally. So how do you think your own view of your body has changed over the course of doing this work?
Oh my God. That's a huge question. So for me, like, I certainly hated parts of my body and I definitely felt self-conscious like pretty much all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm straight passing, cis passing, white, like I have all this body privilege.
Right.
But I also felt that I was like obligated to make everything perfect. So I would have these really obsessive thoughts all the time about like any tiny flaw that probably nobody else could even see or certainly would never notice. And I would obsess over it, taking away from this potential I had to like hit this ideal. Mm-hmm. And all of that came from a feeling that I like owed the world something. So it had this like really dark undertone. I didn't walk around thinking like, I owe it to men to be, you know, a perfect sex object. But like, essentially, that's what was underneath all of my stuff. It was just constant. My brain was constantly on it, no matter what I was doing. Hmm. And over the years, as I started healing that relationship with my body and moving toward body neutrality, I mean, it changed like many times over. But what I can say now is I just don't think about it and I don't care. And I can't even tell you the last time I felt self-conscious. Actually, I can. It was like a year and a half ago, I got this really intense rash down my arm and it was just so gross looking. But also like the thing about body neutrality is you don't get there and then walk around being like, I am so body neutral. Like it's an absence of anxiety, obsession, insecurity, hatred. Like it's an absence. So you don't really think about it until something like that kind of creeps back in and you're like, oh, whoa, I forgot about you. But the difference was this time it had nothing to do with my worth. I did not feel attached to the idea that if someone was disgusted by me, by looking at me and seeing my rash, that I was less worthy as a person or was like failing in some way.
It's just amazing, Jesse. Thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing this with us. I hope it's very helpful for a lot of humans.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's always fun to talk about.
Okay, before we sign off, I want to remind y'all, Nerdette is hosting a cake contest in honor of our 10th anniversary. This is very fun. The winner is going to win a $250 gift card to bookshop.org. That is a lot of Nerdette Book Club books that you could get, or really whatever else you want to. And in case you're wondering what kind of decorating you should be doing, Erin and Adora both had some nice inspiration for you.
I think it would be a cute dog reading a book.
When I think of a cake, I'm like, a blank canvas where I can put anything. I'm like, is it Octavia Butler? Is it a bunch of like, when I think nerd, you know, like it's like the cutest, like eyeglass frames. Also, I'm just like, I just want to see eyeglass frames.
Seriously, it can be anything you want. Or if you don't bake, we have some other ideas for you, plus all the contest rules at wbez.org/nerdettecake. Do it! Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman. JP Swenson builds our newsletter, and we share some pretty great recommendations for TV and books and recipes there. You can find it at wbez.org/nerdetteaf. Our executive producer is Brendan Banizak. We will see you next week. Okay, bye.